He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
Good morning, and are we seeing the farewell to the family sedan? That's what Jay and I will start off talking about today, because you'd think, listening to the press and reading all the media, that the sedan was dead. Jay may have a different opinion than I do. Nissan's claiming in a news blip this morning that the sedan is not going to be dead. It's just in a hiatus. Jay and I have talked about the idea of why the sedan is dead, and or may be dead or shouldn't be dead, whatever. The whole point is what is a vehicle that transports us around in the first place between sedans, SUVs, trucks, I don't know what else, other categories we want to add into those three categories. But if anybody wanted to keep a sedan alive, they wouldn't call it a sedan probably, but if they put it on a steroidal suspension system, they could solve the problem of the sedan that the SUV is claiming to be robbing us from the sedan, which is basically, as Jay said to me this morning, people want to slide in and out horizontally. They don't want to have to climb up a ladder to get into a vehicle, and they don't want to have to sink down into a seat that they can't get out of when they've parked their car at a destination. And I think, Jay, you want to chip in here and
be happy to.
Okay.
So I think this whole debate about cars and SUVs is a little irrelevant in some ways. I think if you look at the history of cars, we're saying, oh, the sedan is gone. But before sedans of the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, or before that, cars were bodies on frames just like trucks were. Their center of gravity was a lot higher. And it is only in the 50s or 60s as cars started getting lower. And we just have this classification of vehicles, and we separate between SUVs and that we classify as quote-unquote trucks and cars and regulations that apply to one or the other. And it's somewhat irrelevant. I mean, why is a Subaru Impreza a car and a Subaru Crosstrek, which is the exact same vehicle but jacked up 3 or 4 inches,
and the Outback,
a truck?
I thought it was 3 or 4 inches, and I thought it used to be called a high pro. But this is so my ignorance.
My whole point is, and that's what I was going on a rant before getting here this morning, is that it's a kind of a moot debate. The vehicles are changing a little bit. We can go back to building vehicles that are a little higher off the ground because the technology is there to make them stick to the ground.
Can I just add something? Because we're actually having a practical problem with an elderly person who has been a sedan person his entire life and has a wonderful BMW. But at this point, getting in and down is more of a problem just physically.
And then back out.
And back out is hopeless against a Subaru that just happens to be higher that he can get in and out of at
will.
Well,
I mentioned Subarus 2 minutes ago, and then you're mentioning Subarus again. That class of vehicles, these small SUVs, happen to be, in my mind, and I'm, not very tall, but kind of the perfect height to slide in and out of. And I hate to say this because I don't consider myself an old person, but they are easy to get into. I have a larger SUV that is, every time I get in, it's a step up.
And that reminds me of a similar story, but from X years ago with the Toyota, one of the first 4Runners, mm-hmm. and a caregiver couldn't get in while the person who needed care had no trouble getting in, the caregiver, it was just too much of a hoist.
That's another problem.
That's a different problem.
But it's a real problem.
Well, yes, but that is my SUVs versus sedans.
But the only reason that I'm mentioning it is because once you get out into the, let's debate it in isolation, or let's debate it practically, you've got differing people who are like the
that's a different situation. The different size people thing is a different situation.
So we're moving towards SUVs, and the numbers are clear. I think it's in 2 years ago, or 2017 versus 2000. I saw numbers recently in 2014. I think we started, or a year or two ago, we past the point where we are now buying more SUVs than cars. The truck sales have remained fairly stable at like 2.3, 2.6 million a year. SUVs have gone up in the last few years from 6 to 8 million, I think. And the total sales are around
Between 16 and 17 million per year.
Can you just reclassify? In the same way that, you know, the bond market for many, many years was 30 years, and then it was like, now we'll make it 10 years?
Good luck with that one.
Okay.
Yeah. That we'll leave that to the bond market.
I just don't think that's
happening anytime soon.
So they're not. So no one's in the mood to reclassify the.
Not in this room.
Okay.
Okay, cars. You know, cars versus trucks versus SUVs. I've watched them go in cycles. There seems to be, and the American manufacturers at least seem to have a relatively short attention span with respect to trying to maintain. Lines of vehicles that they have been building very well and very successful for years, but because the numbers go down precipitously for a little while, they think that particular vehicle line is maybe dead. There are ways they could fix it without having to move people to SUVs, which would be counter to what Jay said. They started making them center of gravity lower in sedans because they were high cars were tippy, and we had the Explorer rollover situation, and we have the SUVs. And now you've got all this technology built in with computers running the suspension systems, adjusting the anti-slip regulations and all the other things there to keep cars of whatever height they are on the road, theoretically horizontally on the road and not rolling over. You can still roll a car, any car, at some point if you exceed the bounds of its ability to
it's becoming harder and harder, though.
It's becoming harder and harder, but it's more technology than it is necessarily high versus low stances on the road, because the technology is there to counter the forces of gravity and centrifugal force or tripetal force or whatever that would possibly make a car roll. And I remember bouncing and rolling a four-wheel drive Jeep-like vehicle back in the last century. I did a 360-degree rollover going only 35 or 40 miles an hour coming back from a soccer game that I had refereed in a southern town in the state of Connecticut, and I was starving. I was looking for a restaurant on the side of the road, and I was distracted driving way back then.
Before cell phones.
Before cell phones.
Oh, so
and
you
all
could
that.
Be distracted before
and,
cell phones?
When I turned around and looked back at the road, somebody had deemed to pull out in front of me, not far enough in front of me for me to brake safely to avoid hitting him in the rear or her in the rear, as the case might have been. And I went into an evasive maneuver and hit these curbs that they put on a lot of the roads to control drainage. And I was in a high center of gravity vehicle with a stiff suspension, no computers controlling the suspension system and the ability for the car to or truck to maintain its stance on the road, and the right front tire hit the curb. The stiff suspension and the dynamics that took place then made the car bounce, and since the wheels were turned, the car started to roll over on its outside, and I went over 360 degrees and landed on my wheels right side up going the other way on the road. And I was only going 35 miles an hour because it was dark and blah, blah, blah. But I survived fine. The car didn't survive too well. But, you know, we're now that doesn't happen anymore. Well, it might happen, but probably not going to. But we're just, you know, cars are not necessarily dead because SUVs have taken over. But we go back to the horizontal entry and exit situation is probably being the big thing that we are doing right now with vehicles. And the sedans haven't caught up to that with a higher suspension or a higher seating position.
I don't think that ingress and getting in and out of the vehicle is the major concern. I mean, SUVs, crossovers, offer more utility. You can put more stuff in them. You can put more people in them. Higher ground clearance means you can go slightly off-road and go up in the hills and go hiking and canoeing and doing a bunch of things that we always did, but it was not so easy to do before with cars. But back to your vehicle, I think you should consider getting a new Bronco, because I know that was the Ford Bronco that you had 30 or so years ago, right?
30 years ago,
yeah. Yeah, it was 30.
73.
That's 40 years ago.
That's 50, almost
45
50.
Years ago.
Right. Broncos, were they not notorious for sort of, you could do that with your Bronco?
Do what, roll over safely? I don't know about
or
that.
Or not so.
You can go off-road like you can go off-road in the Jeep Wrangler and the old Bronco.
No, I totally understand. I just thought that,
and the Toyota Land Cruisers
in the same
and
way
all
that way, way back in the mists of time, you know, Pintos had, you know, different marks had different wraps for things that happened.
Some of us bought vehicles for different reasons than we do today. And when I bought the Bronco, I was in... obviously a lot younger. I would like to do off-roading. I wanted something rugged in the winter, capable in the winter, and that was the vehicle of choice.
Right.
And it was a fabulous vehicle, and you can buy restored ones now for $80,000 to $100,000 out in the West, because that's what it costs to reconstitute the old frames and the old vehicles. But and Ford is about to bring out a new version of the old Bronco, and I'm waiting to see whether it's going to be the big Bronco or the original size Bronco, et cetera, when they finally hit some streets.
Now, back, I can't remember when.
I'm not going to buy one.
No, I'm not asking that, but I am thinking about a smaller truck. Like, was it the Ranger?
Colorado? Oh,
no,
the Ranger.
I'm thinking of some, was it
Ford
a Ford?
Ranger.
The Ford Ranger is
that
what
was discontinued, and then suddenly.
And now it's coming back.
It was like,
it's coming back.
We need.
It's been coming back for 3 years now.
Okay,
Ford
so
should have been
back?
Here years
Ford
ago.
Ford made a tactical mistake when they took it off the road.
But I'm asking about the.
And that was because, just a minute, the mid-sized small pickup trucks were deemed to be obsolete and no longer worthwhile because the cost of them were the same as the cost of the big pickups. And why buy a small truck for the same price you could have once bought the big truck for.
But now that you can no longer buy a big truck without selling your
Chevy
grandchildren.
Chevy proved everybody wrong with their Colorado. Chrysler dropped the Durango, or the mid-sized pickup truck, the Dodge. They took that off. Ford took their Ranger off, and GM and Toyota have had the market for those size trucks for the last 3 years.
And then somebody probably looked at the numbers and went, guys.
Yeah. Well, and the big trucks just keep on getting bigger. So now, you know, a medium-sized truck now is probably the same size as a full-size pickup truck was.
It's pretty close. The Colorado just got reviewed by Auto Week magazine, and the guy, and it was a 40, it was a 45,000 or $48,000 fully outfitted mid-sized truck with a diesel engine in it, and the big pickups now cost upwards of $60,000 with the same level of equipment. So everything's been sliding upward in terms of the price of vehicles, of these vehicles in particular. And there's a lot of profit to be made in trucks, as we've talked in this show several times over the past few years.
Yeah, the reason that
manufacturers love them.
The reason that I actually mentioned that was just yet another instance of the powers that be deciding something that was rather detached from.
Well, in the case of Ford and the Ranger, there was like Robin said, a huge tactical mistake, and the unforgivable part of this is that Ford was and is selling the Ford Ranger in every other market in the world, and it was mind-boggling that they did not bring that truck to the U.S. earlier, whether it be made abroad or not. I mean, they can build the same vehicle in a factory here. You know, we over the years, Ford has built like Ford Focus. You know, they build them in the States. They build them in Europe. It's the same car, pretty much. They can build them in different areas of the world. They could have done that with the Ford Ranger 3, 4, 5 years ago.
And
why they did
you,
not, it's still, but it's a mystery to me. And the fact that that Ford Ranger was announced and seen at auto shows a year or two ago, and is still not on the streets. It's just
baffling. And that should make people wonder when you start, you know, exploring into these situations. Like, okay, that was A, tactical, and B, gee, it hasn't come back. Well, there must be some reason.
Okay. Well, Jay has some other topics I think he wants to cover.
He does.
Return of the Diesel is one.
Yeah, we'll talk about that some other time. But going through the magazine and looking at the magazines, Motor Trend and Car and Driver, among others, all the new vehicles, it is surprising to see that a lot of or a few manufacturers are coming out with diesel engines in some of their trucks, utility vehicles,
cars.
Namely, Mazda has been promising a diesel engine in both cars and SUVs for, I think, the last five or six years.
And it has yet to arrive.
So we'll hold our breath just a little bit longer. But it's kind of ironic that diesels may be staging a comeback. And I'm a big fan of diesels, so I kind of look forward to that.
Robin raised something, by the way, at the I think it was last week, and I don't know if this is a nasty topic or not, but it was the smell of emissions.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And
yes.
Jay has supported my theory,
right,
because I brought this up to Jay a few weeks ago and said, I'm smelling very bad exhaust coming in my...
Every time he mentions that, my nose curls. So I'm just curious. I wanted your view, but something's up.
Well, yes, possibly, and no. I mean, I did a quick research on that, and it's actually difficult to find reliable and nobody wants to talk about information. The consensus seems to be that it's totally normal. That's what catalytic converters do. They smell. Part of the reason is if you're driving a vehicle, and this is what I read on forums, and I'm not sure how exact this is.
I think they're right.
But the fact that you're driving, let's say, at a normal speed, you know, at low RPMs, the catalytic converters are not really heating up. And then all of a sudden, you know, you go up a steep hill or you make a pass, an angry pass, and you're just, you know, revving the engine really high for a certain period of time, that burst in temperature is what could cause those catalytic converters to smell. The consensus is that it is nothing to worry about. It's totally normal. And that's pretty much it.
I have a different theory.
But that's okay.
I think that the emissions controls that operate, as Jay suggested, in cruise mode, you're in your eighth gear of an eight-gear transmission or sixth gear of a six-gear transmission. The engine's operating at low RPM and not putting out a lot of power to maintain the speed is a little bit of a hopeful suggestion that it's not the emission controls that are being turned off under steep acceleration mode demand, which is what my theory is, because we all know that when you push the accelerator floor, you are asking for a lot more fuel. The computer is changing the fuel management and level of the operation. Computers are running these engines now, and I think I'd like to suggest, and nobody wants to talk about it, that maybe some of the emission controls are changing the amount of control that they're managing the engine with, and we're getting a richer fuel level going into the engines, and to a certain degree, in what Jay said, they're overloading maybe the catalytic converters, which are cleaning up the exhaust, as opposed to not just getting hotter and letting out more smells.
Are you suggesting another VW conspiracy theory?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of discussion in Europe. Europe has been actually taking this thing to a greater level in terms of emission testing of vehicles in Europe. And they have their testing modes added gasoline engine controls, emission testing to their systems. And there have been some delays of some of the models of cars, gasoline engine cars, in both Europe and elsewhere, because the tests are not complete as to what the emissions controls, how the emission controls are managing the emissions levels. You know, they did the states. The United States people and Europe used to take the word of the manufacturers that their machines were sending out clean emissions, and they weren't really testing them. Now the diesel thing blew that all apart, and I think some countries have added the gasoline engine situation to the testing road to see just exactly how far this might go beyond the diesel scandal.
So
So
what's your theory,
I think,
Jill?
I don't have a theory, per se.
But do know that it smells more.
I know that it smells more, and so therefore somebody's saying, don't worry, no problem, but something actually reeks is the sort of discrepancy
it is
that
bad.
I spend my life.
Jay agrees, and
I drive
you
a
agree.
Diesel. It doesn't smell.
No, I understand.
No, but I haven't been up behind your diesel going up, but I'm
you can't
about
follow
gasoline.
My diesel up the hill.
I'm going. Yes, I can. I can tell you that gasoline car engines are spewing forth smelly exhaust.
Right. So therefore,
and
if
on
we
hills,
are...
particularly as we said last week's show, there's a hill right around here. Boy, when you're behind a line of cars that are accelerating past you on that hill,
God forbid,
I got to turn my air circulation on to recirculate and try to keep the exhaust in front of me from coming in through the.
Be ready. The diesel's coming back.
Well,
I don't know if that's going to clean up the smell, but it.
But the point is, all right. And in the final moments of who's going where?
Jay's got some more stuff I think he wants to talk about. I'm not sure what it is, but he'll come up with it quickly. He's got his list.
I was just going through the new SUVs and the ones I think may be meaningful and others not. Audi's coming out with a revamped Q3. They're coming out with a Q8, which people may wonder why even come out with a Q8. It's a
bigger,
coupier version of a Q7, more expensive, less space, but it's not about maximizing the space. It's about putting out a big, comfortable, luxury vehicle.
And couping it is the key word there, because what they're doing is they're de-squaring it a bit, which, as you know, my opinion about de-squaring square-ish design vehicles certainly cuts out on the practicality of compartmental storage, be it people in the rear seat whose headroom gets infringed when they start squishing the roof lines, to the baggage compartment behind when you want to put square things in areas that don't have any square corners.
We have great words on this show.
We do.
Cooping, D-box, D-squaring?
I love them.
D-squaring.
I love improving language, and I would just like to say that anyone who wants to bring me a Range Rover is just, I'm here.
Well, I think you should.
Have you discovered the Range Rover?
What do you mean if I discovered it?
Well, are you like me? I mean, I...
Obviously, you don't listen when I talk.
Not That's all right. the time, but...
Okay, so carry on.
We have less than 2 minutes. Everybody.
Uh-oh. Chevy Blazer.
Blazer's coming out.
The new Blazer. Back. It's just another vehicle, car-based vehicle.
And let's see what's disappearing. The Beetle has finally been declared to be
dead in about
a year. Production's going to stop, I think, with the 2018 model year or early 2019 model
year. You can't resuscitate something unless it's dead, right? So
it may die in electric mode is what the theory might be with the Beetle, because it's an iconic design that has been around since the wartime.
I have one. I think this will be a hot seller.
And the Bronco's coming back.
Kia Telluride. Large-ish SUV. Square-ish. Not D-squared too much. Square-ish. Looks cool. Should be interesting. V6 engine. A real engine.
Real engine now.
Yeah.
Four cylinders are not real engines.
No, none
of these little hybrids.
But this is going to be going with the VW Atlas and the Subaru Ascent.
One last thing, and I will come back to that sometime in the next few weeks. Inline six-cylinder is back from Mercedes. Greatest sounding engines ever, and they are back.
In sedans.
Well, they will follow in SUVs too, don't you worry.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.